Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to our more than 1,500 podcast episodes, visit our website at www.biteradio.me. Today, my special guest is Dr. Anton Gross, a phenomenologist and author of The Handbook for a New Consciousness, The Next Step in Human Evolution. The Handbook for a New Consciousness is a non-denominational self-study guide designed for the devout believer, the dogmatic atheist, and everyone in between. Through mind-blowing exercises, uniquely designed games, and imaginative puzzles, you will be guided to personally experience new consciousness, the universal oneness, in the safety and privacy of your own mind, whatever your current beliefs. Born into a Jewish but profoundly atheistic family, Anton denied everything religious for the first half of his life. Then in 1978, at the age of 37, he discovered spirituality through a near-death experience, going through the tunnel into the light and experiencing a reality different and greater than anything he had ever thought possible. Since then, he has devoted his life to studying different spiritual paths, leading meditation practice, and helping those at the end of life. For more information, you can visit his website, which is www.antongross.com, and that's Anton, G-R-O-S-Z, Z as in zebra, .com. So with that, I'd like to welcome you to the show. Good day, Anton.
Hi there, Robert, and thank you very, very much for the invite. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, I always love sharing this new perspective for listeners to try and better their lives. So I think your handbook is definitely what the doctor ordered, so to speak.
Well, I certainly hope so.
Yeah. So let's start with, first of all, what inspired you to write the handbook for a new consciousness now, at this particular time?
Well, first of all, Robert, it's taken me a number of years to write it. When you think about the fact that my experience was in 1978, which is Lord knows how many years ago, and it was, you know, being something that I had never believed in, that was just antithetical to all what my life had been for 37 years, and to suddenly find out, my God, there is a higher consciousness. We are all connected. What amazing. And I thought, you know, this information couldn't have been given just for me alone, this one little piece of meat here. So I figured I had to write, I had to share it. And of course, I studied, I did everything I could to learn about all different spiritual paths. And I've been working on this for a long, long time, and realized that it's not enough to just tell people, you know, this is the way it is. Now listen to me. You know, there are enough religious leaders, political leaders who say, I'm right and this is the way you do things. The key, I believe, is to experience something for yourself. And phenomenology is the study of the science of experiential reality. When you experience something, it's real for you, even if somebody out there says, well, prove it. You can't, because you've experienced it inside. But it's real for you, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Sure. So what I wanted to do is to create a method whereby people, readers, could experience what I had experienced without having to have a near-death experience to do it like I did. So it took a while to write the book, but that was the reason for its creation.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have had, over the last 14 years I've done podcasts, I've had many doctors and scientists who did not believe in, you know, a higher consciousness or hereafter or any of that kind of spiritual, you know, perception until they experienced it, you know. And then once it's experienced, it's like, oh, okay, now I get it.
Exactly. I mean, just to give you a background, when I was 6 years, I mean, this has been my whole life. When I was 6 years old, my grandfather sat me on his knee and he said, God is the sum total of man's ignorance. We used to think that the sun is God. Then we learned how the sun works, and now the sun isn't God anymore. One day, and he wiggled his finger in my face, and he says, one day, my boy, you know, humanity will know how everything works, and then there'll be no need for God at all. And of course, you know, when you're 6 years old, you believe your grandfather, especially since he wins all the arguments in the family because he's the loudest one, right? So anyway, this was my life, and I didn't believe anything that could not be proved. You know, science is right. And then, son of a gun. Here, well, you know, I mellowed as I got older. It wasn't worth arguing about, so I became agnostic. Hey, it doesn't matter, you know, if there is or there isn't, you know, who cares, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember a girl in the neighborhood saying, you know, how would you know not to kill other people, you know, if God didn't tell you? And I said, oh, Beverly, it's just wrong. I know it's wrong. You know, I don't need God to tell me that. But then, boom, you know, I began meditating and left my body and doing it again. And, you know, and when I going out with this near-death experience, no oxygen for about 3 minutes, and seeing the tunnel through the light, and suddenly, boom, oh, my goodness, this must be what this is, you know, what the people have experienced who've had near-death experiences. I must, you know, be out. And they were the reality greater than anything I could have imagined, a light brighter than anything I could have imagined, a feeling of greater dimensions, and my body began rolling around on the ground like I was in an epileptic fit. But in my mind, absolute peace and calm and just joy. And when I could control my body one more time, you know, I was on my knees with my hands folded in prayer position, and my first words were, I am reborn. I am reborn in God. And I was so embarrassed to hear me say that. After 37 years of being an atheist, oh my goodness. But I could not deny what I had experienced. And that's why I created the book.
Yeah. It is such a common kind of experience for people, you know, with near-death experiences. And to me, it makes one think of, you know, kind of like, why stay here, you know, if it's so great there, you know?
Right. Well, you know, truthfully, I have no fear of death. I'm 85 years old, Robert. And how much longer do I have on this planet? You know, I'm in good health, you know, knock wood. But, you know, another 15 years would be 100. My gosh. You know, I mean, let's face it. When I turned 80, I realized that if I were to, you know, kill over and drop dead at the moment, nobody is going to say, oh, he died so young. right?
Yeah.
So very simply, you know, it happens to all, but there's no fear of it at all. And in fact, this is what got me to become, a home care provider, taking care of people, and then getting involved with at End of Life, and I became a chaplain for a hospice. This was the last job I held before I retired. Chaplain for a hospice, helping people to make the passage into the next reality.
I have so much respect for people who are, you know, end of life healthcare providers, because to me it seems that transition and death is probably one of the most vulnerable times a person would experience, you know, in a lifetime, and to be able to share that or even help guide that peacefully is really, really something.
Well, it is, and there was no question that because I had the experience, I was able to help others by telling them, hey, you know, if in your sleep you happen to see a white light, a bright light, follow the light. Don't be afraid of it.
Yeah.
And it can help you. I mean, we're all going to make the passage, but, you know, when someone dies in their sleep, you say, oh, that's so peaceful. That's such a good way to do it. And in truth, it is, without pain, without suffering. And there was also a woman that I remember who was crying and crying, and I understand. And she said, oh, I've been such a terrible person. You know, will God forgive me? You know, and I said, excuse me, do you have any children? She says, yes, I have a daughter. I said, look, if your daughter came up to you and said, Mom, I've done some terrible things. Do you still love me? What would you say? Would you love her? She said, of course I would. I said, why do you expect any less from God?
Yeah. And it's interesting that you talk about that, because my mother, at her end of life, was very much like that. She truly believed that in her heart that she was going to go to hell for all of the mistakes that she made. And to the point where when my sister, who was the caregiver at the time, asked her if she wanted a priest to come in, it's like, no, he can't help me. You know,
right.
No one can help me.
Right. You know, it's funny you bring that up. Apparently we've got a bunch of in common here, because I was with my mother when she died, and it's an interesting story, if I may. My sister, who is younger than me, my mother made her power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Mom, well, you know, just why? And she said, oh, you're so woo-woo. She said, if I'm at the end of life, you'll say, go, 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 go. And your sister will try and keep me going. Well, okay, fine. Anyway, they're on the East Coast. I was on the West Coast. My mother fell, you know, she's in a coma. My sister called, can't do anything else, you know, time for you to come out. So I went out to see her. And my mother is in the hospital. She is completely out of it, in a coma. She's lying on the side. And I'm there. And I had written, my first book was Letters to a Dying Friend, which was a westernized version of the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
That was put out in 1990. And so I'm reading her from that. I'm telling her, Mom, you know, you've been a good mother. It's okay. You go, you know, thank you for all you did. We love you. If you see, you know, follow the light and so on. And she opens her eyes. She's lying there. She opens her eyes. She looks at me. We never said a word. But she had the look on her face, oh, hell, it's him. He's here. this must be it. You know, if my sister called him and he came across the country, this is it. And I was performing Therapeutic Touch. Do you know Therapeutic Touch, Robert?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Okay, well, it goes from, you know, when people, when nurses use it in a hospital, they go from the head downwards to get the energy out of the brain, which feels pain. When someone is dying, you do it from the feet going up, all right?
Hmm.
So that they will leave, you drive over their aura, you're just, you know, to reiterate for those who may not know, that it's running your hand over the body, oh, about 3-4 inches above the body in the aura of the energy field. And
mm-hmm.
you send the energy up so the person, if they're going to leave their body and die at that time, they leave from the highest chakra. Right?
Mm.
So you go from feet up to the head to pull the energy that way. And you can feel the lower part of the body is cold while the higher part of the body is warm. Anyway, so I'm doing that on my mother after she has looked at me, and I'm, you know, performing Therapeutic Touch, and I can see her vein throbbing, the jugular vein throbbing on the side of her neck, and it got less and less and less until it stopped. And I suddenly had the feeling, oh my God, what a blessing that I have helped her into the next world as she helped me into this world.
Yeah. Wow.
And I went to turn to tell the nurses in the hospital that she had died. And they're all standing in the doorway looking in. They'd never seen anything like that before.
Wow.
But that was a special thing, and I think it proved it with the, you know, the ultimate connection between mom and me.
Yeah, it would have been. Now, let's start talking about consciousness.
Yes.
Your book is Handbook for a New Consciousness, but let's just first start with our general understanding of what regular, I guess, consciousness would be. What's your understanding of it?
For me, you know, it used to be that, you know, and most people think, oh, consciousness is my ability to think, my, you know, knowledge of this, so on. But as I understand it now and as I experience it now, consciousness is just the very feeling, I am. I exist. When each one of us says, I am, we say that, and then we add adjectives after that.
I am
male, female, old, young, black, white, rich, poor, blah, 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 whatever we want to do that defines us as being unique. And yes, they're all important, because how boring would it be for the oneness if we were all exactly the same, right?
Right.
Right. So we have our differences, yes, but the pure consciousness, the awareness of I am, is the same for each one of us. And when you say it or I say it, it doesn't just feel the same, the idea of existing, of being. It is the same feeling of being. We are not separate leaves. We are one tree. That feeling of consciousness, of existence inside each one of us is the oneness of the universe.
Yeah. That, you know, I liked the analogy that you used about leaves on a tree. You know, the fact that there are all these different leaves, very unique leaves,
mm-hmm.
but they're all part of the same tree. So for me, that was a good way of recognizing individuality, yet part of a whole.
Absolutely. And, you know, when it happens, there's another thing that I've come up with, the idea that what if there were eyes on the end of the fingers? And they looked out, and they saw the thumb, and they said, "You stupid thumb, coming from way over there, take that, and that, and that, and that." And they scratched the thumb, and the thumb got infected, and the infection went down the thumb into the hand and back up into the fingers, and the fingers got infected. Would the fingers have attacked the thumb if they knew they were connected? I don't think so.
Yeah.
So shouldn't humanity be as smart as our fingers? You know, when we realize that we are all connected on the inside,
mm-hmm.
if I hurt you, I'm hurting myself. Right?
Right.
You know, right. Yeah. Why do we do that? We do that because we focus on the thing, on the uniqueness of us, the separateness of us, instead of realizing that the entire creation is a oneness, and all the wonderful things that we can do when we use our skills and talents and abilities, not just for ourselves, but for the good of all.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that 100%. So, with knowing how your understanding of consciousness, how does that differ from new consciousness?
Well, new consciousness is knowing that. All right. We will say, well, conscious, right now, for example, someone will say, well, a rock isn't conscious. I mean, let's face it, there was a time when rocks, as I point out in the book, were the most evolved and advanced beings on the planet. Imagine what an evolution it was when plants showed up. Oh, my God, here was a being that didn't just sit there, you know, like a rock, stoned, well, so to speak. But, you know, but here a plant could turn and face the sun. It could reach for water. Rocks just sit there. You know, what an evolutionary step. Then think about what an evolutionary step, animals above plants, and then humans above animals. But we still think of ourselves as being separate. And so we do things for ourselves. You know, I have to look out for me, right? Rather than everything. And we don't realize that Earth itself is a living being. Gaia, right? Mother Earth. So humans we are the most advanced being on the planet right now. Maybe whales, dolphins, you know. We don't really know for sure. But imagine the great forward step when, and the evolutionary step when people will realize, oh my God, we're all connected. And I should be doing things for the good of all. We should all be working together using our individual skills and talents, because we can't each be able to do everything. But if I do this and you do that, it all gets done.
Yeah.
And we have to care for the planet on which we live. Imagine, I mean, humans right now are killing the being on which we lived. If you think about it, it would be like leaves going and attacking the tree they're attached to.
Mm-hmm.
What other species puts plastic into the ocean? What other species puts toxic gases into the atmosphere? You know, when you think about it, it's absolutely crazy. So new consciousness is the awareness that we are all connected, and that we live that way, that whatever the color of your skin, whatever your belief system, whatever, you know, your political system, that doesn't matter. What matters is we are all in this together, and we have to care for each other because we are all one.
Yeah.
And when that happens, Robert, we will have the heaven on earth as it was intended to be.
Exactly, exactly. Now, one of the things I liked about your book is you include stories for, you know, to make your point and bring home ideas.
Mm-hmm.
One of them that I really liked, that really kind of dealt with paths, a path that people take, is the Jewel of Truth. Would you mind sharing one so that people can understand, you know, not only about what's contained in your book, but kind of what the whole idea is about?
Sure, sure. And I'm glad you liked it. Basically, I'm saying that, you know, imagine a circular forest. Any kind of forest you want, any kind of trees you want, but it's your forest, right? It's in your mind, and you're thinking about it now, but it's perfectly round. And in the middle of the forest, there's a castle, and in the middle of the castle, there's a special room with inside that room is a chest, and in that chest is a jewel, the Jewel of Truth. And it's many people have gone into that, find that Jewel of Truth from different places around the edge of the forest. And the key is that they can go in any number of different ways and reach it because it's the same distance. It's in the middle of this circular forest. Well, the problem is that somebody went in a couple thousand years ago and found the Jewel of Truth, and other people said, hey, this guy found it, so this must be the way in.
Mm-hmm.
And they put up signs saying, this way to the Jewel of Truth. And when people would say, you know, they'd stop them, they'd say, are you going into the Jewel of Truth? And they say, yes, well, I am. They say, well, take this path. And the person would say, well, no, I want to go in that way. And you can go in any way because it's the same distance. But the problem is that some people say, no, this is the only way you can go into the Jewel of Truth. And when that happens, people get absolutely, we know that there have been wars, there have been killings, as humans say, in the name of God, in the name of the Prince of Peace, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe, and this is not just a fake story, this was something made up, think about it, just how many years ago in Northern Ireland were Protestants and Catholics killing each other because they prayed to Jesus in different ways?
Yeah.
Unbelievable that humans do this. So the key is that there is a truth, but you can reach it from any way you want, and the only person you have to fear is the one who says, my way is the only way.
Yeah, that to me, that always felt just wrong. I mean, the idea that you know, there is only one way to kind of either get to the jewel or two, or even to scale the mountain. You know,
that's right. Look, let me give you another example, and you know, and I get these things coming into my mind, and I realize that they're not for me alone, but they're to share. let's say, Robert, let's say that when you were an infant, you were on an airplane flying across Australia, and the plane crashed, and everybody died on the plane except for you. Now, the native indigenous people of Australia, the Maori tribe, they would have heard the plane go across, they would have heard the plane crash, and they would have examined it. And if they saw everyone dead except this living infant, they would have taken you in, right?
Yeah.
They would have cared for you, you know, and you would have grown up in a completely different way than you are now. Your language would be different. The foods you ate would be different. You know, you may not be able to drive a car, but you could probably run faster and longer than you can now, all right? You would understand things different. Does this make you wrong? No. It just makes you different. And to go back to the idea of what is consciousness, and you know, where you would still say, I am, and then you would describe yourself differently, even though physically it would be the same being you are now. Fascinating when you think about it.
Yeah. So now, one of the things also I like about your book is that you include, like I said, games, puzzles.
Yeah.
And in a way, it makes the learning fun. I hope so. Yeah. So now, one of them I'd liked was Please Draw a Tree. So, can you tell, just to give again the listeners an idea of the kinds of, you know, exercises that are in the handbook, can you explain that one and what it was meant to show?
Yes, yes, I can. It's, you know, there's a spoiler alert here, but, you know, well, when you get the book, here's spoiler alert, but
right.
You will get it now. I ask people to draw a tree. And then, of course, in the book, I tell, you know, when we turn the page, I say, did you draw the tree? Because many times in a book, you just read something and keep going. But I really, really, really want them to draw a tree. And when they draw a tree, I want them to look at it. And the question is, how many people draw it just with the trunk and the leaves? Or how many draw it with the roots on it? And the point is that many people, the majority of people, will draw a tree without the roots. And I didn't ask him to draw half a tree.
Right.
And I didn't ask him to draw just the part of a tree that you can see. I asked him to draw a tree. And we all know the trees have roots. But this is one of the ways that we can show that words are really, really hard to get something across to someone else. That what a word means to me could be different than what the word means to you. And it's the experience that counts, not the words. So that's the point of that one. You may think you heard and understood, but you really didn't.
Right. Yeah,
communication is very hard, Robert. You know that.
Yeah. And I think the one thing that stood out to me about that particular exercise too is just the individual's, I guess, perception of what, you know, they're asked to do and how
it
relates. And then, you know, it really shows how individual we are in our framework.
Oh, absolutely. If I say, think about your mother, you know, you may have, you know, this loving thought. I may have my loving thought, but somebody out there might say, oh, she was such an annoying, boy, am I glad I left home, you know? And so how can we talk about things that are so different for each other by using words? It's the experience that counts, and that's the whole bit of new consciousness. Experience it. Don't just hear it from the outside. Experience it from the inside.
Yeah. So how would someone, I mean, other than getting your book and going through the exercises, how would they start to bring in those individual new consciousness feelings or experiences?
Wow. Well, first of all, I do like the idea of them getting my book. But it's really, really hard to say. It could be because it's different for everyone. different for everyone else. You know, I'm thinking, for example, even in the Bible, there are things, Luke 17:21, the kingdom of God is within you, right? Mm-hmm. I am consciousness. That's the oneness. That's what quantum physics is saying now, that there's, they call it dark energy. Religion calls it God. It doesn't matter what you call it, but there's this oneness in the universe. Jesus himself, John 14:6, says, you know, I am the way. But he spoke Aramaic. He didn't speak English, by the way. And what the words in Aramaic could have also been translated, I am is the way. Okay? Hmm. So, you know, if you recognize, go deep inside yourself to feel, look, if you look at yourself in the mirror now, you see yourself, at the age you are. Well, that sure looks different. I'll bet you don't look the same now as you did when you were a teenager. But when you look in the mirror, you still say, that's me. I mm-hmm. am. All right. And the idea is, if you can feel that pure feeling of being, of existing as oneness, and know that that hasn't changed, even though your body's changed, your mind has changed, your thoughts have changed, even though you know, when you realize that, and you realize that everybody has that exact same feeling inside, then you see the connection of it all. Then you see what Earth, what the universe, what life truly, truly is.
Yeah. You know, in part of your book, you talk about the of understanding, knowing versus thinking. And I think that kind of fits right in what you were talking about as far as thinking, knowing, that now that certainty, you know, versus thinking.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Thinking takes place in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing takes place in the gut. That's why they call it a gut feel, right? I mean, you know it. You know, in the book, I have, you know, these simple set of questions, you know. Just say, if you know it, say, I know it. You know, you don't have to say the answer. Just say, I know it. You know, how much is 2 and 2? I know that answer. You can say you know it even without thinking that the answer is 4. Oh, to come up with the answer 4, you have to be in your head. But to know that you know 2 plus 2, at in your gut. And the interesting thing is that I found that when you know you don't know something, that's also a case of knowing, right?
Yeah, true.
Right, the question I answer is, what's my wife's middle name? You don't know what, you know, my wife's middle name is, you know, but you know that you don't know it. So that's not in your head. It's in your gut. I feel it. And we can, if you feel these things, that's pure consciousness, not what's in the mind, because other things are conscious without thinking. That's the thinking part of it. That's what makes humans humans. Animals, the only thing that they thought about was eat or be eaten. Right.
Right.
Right. And, you know, humans are great level beyond that, but they still had the feeling of being, of existing. Even plants have that feeling of being and existing. They don't know, I mean, they don't know what they look like. They don't, a rose bush doesn't say, oh, damn, the bush next to me, she's so much prettier than I am. All right. But what they will do, what they'll do is turn and face the sun. Have you ever raised an avocado, you know, plant from a pit?
Yep, in a window.
Isn't it amazing? You put the pit in the water, and it grows up, and a little leaf comes out, and it faces the window. It faces the sun. Mm-hmm. And if you turn that around so that the leaf is facing inside the room, maybe later on that afternoon, it's facing back outside again. How did it know? It is conscious. It doesn't know language. It doesn't talk. It doesn't think things, but it feels them. It is conscious. It knows somehow or other I am now facing darkness, and I turn to feel the light coming in. That's consciousness. That's consciousness at a less sophisticated level. And I believe, and I think, and I know I talk about this in the book, that, you know, science has said for all these years that the brain creates mind.
Mm-hmm.
That the bigger the brain, the greater the mind. Well, what I believe is the case is that the bigger the brain, the more of universal consciousness is allowed to enter into the body that has that brain.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So that, yes, humans are, you know, have a larger brain than dogs. Dogs have a larger brain than frogs. Frogs have a larger brain than slugs. And we also have a larger mind. We can think more than dogs. With dogs, we can think more than frogs, and slugs. But it's not that the brain has created it. It just opened us up to things that are out there. And we are now about to take that next step where we have all the knowledge that we currently have plus new consciousness, the awareness that we are all connected as one. And just think what we can do when we do that.
Oh, absolutely. And it is so needed at this particular time.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, gosh, believe it or not, Anton, we're toward the end of the show, but I want to, what do you hope that people will take away from reading Handbook for a New Consciousness?
I hope that they will take away the feeling that, one, they are special. They are unique. Let me read to you, by the way, a quote that I have on the wall from Dr. Haridas Chaudhry. He was the founder of the California Institute of Integral Studies, where I got my PhD in the evolution of human consciousness. I wrote my dissertation on him, and he has this beautiful poem, or not poem, let me just share it with you, and you'll see what I mean. As you get up in the morning, before starting the day's activities, sit down for a while quietly and in a relaxed mood. Then concentrate upon your true self as an instrument of the divine or as an active center of the dynamic world spirit. Or, in case you have inwardly revolted against all religion and philosophy, you may concentrate upon yourself as a creative artist. You are an architect of new higher values. Your life has been given to you with all its impulses and urges, thoughts and emotions, talents and handicaps as the raw material to be fashioned into a thing of beauty and joy by whatever creative ability you can summon. That's
wow.
The message. That's the message. You are special. You are unique. No other creature exactly like you ever has or ever will be on this planet or any other planet in the universe. Now, use all those skills and talents and abilities for the good of all. That's the message.
Boy. Couldn't have been a better close to the show. That is wonderful.
Thank you.
Well, Dr. Anton, it has been wonderful speaking with you, and you know, I look forward to staying in touch. And,
thank you very much.
And I
My pleasure to be here, and thank you so much for the invite. And yes, hopefully we can speak again.
Great. Again, everyone, today my special guest is Dr. Anton Gross. He is the author of Handbook for a New Consciousness, The Next Step in Human Evolution. And again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is www.antongross.com. And Gross is G-R-O-S-Z, is a zebra. And be sure to pick up his handbook. You learn and you'll have fun. And, you know, what better way to spend the day?
Thank you so very much, Robert. My pleasure to be here.
You're welcome.
I wish you peace.
Thank you very much. And then in closing, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.